Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. We still have my consort and cohort and various other nice adjectives. Guest Penny Bright, the brightest woman I know, and she's the person who says to John Key, John Key says, "Go away, Penny," and Penny goes, "I'll see you in Helensville." And you've got to use that, Penny. Damn it, Penny, over the years I have given you gold, I have given you diamonds, I have given you platinum. Please use them.
I'll see you in Helensville. Well, the fact that here he was when he was opposed to Helen Clark and he was actually in the Helensville electorate.
Yeah, well, you know, after he turned in, it really became more like hell. And my very special other guest that we have joining us from down the line, who has been driving around all over the place with his campaign vehicle that he needs to earn his daily bread, Ian Parker. Welcome to the show, mate.
G'day, Vinny. Nice to catch up again, mate. Good to see you still putting the hard questions out.
Yeah, I don't really ask the hard questions. I more like have this this little radio share as a mutual whinging session for people who actually at least know what's going on and really effed off that nobody else does, and they just seem to be enslaved and hate us and abuse us and things like that. So I just provide this little sort of opposite platform for us, you know.
Oh, mate, I think you do a great service in giving a lot of people a voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, well done.
You know, nobody else is doing it, so... The responsibility falls to the one with the power. What can I say? That's what power's for. It's for helping people, not for taking stuff off people and getting more power. But anyway, speaking of taking stuff off people and getting more power, the Prime Sinister! He's just the most disgusting. Oh my God. I'm becoming extremely unprofessional politically. You may have noticed. But it's not so much about facts and evidence now. It's just more about, are they a scumbag or are they not? That's the only factor of evidence that I really care about. After that, it becomes all about the abuse in their direction, preferably. Because it makes me feel better. I hope it makes them feel worse, but I can't, you know, you can't hope for everything.
Well, thankfully, there's lots of on-the-record evidence to support that, Vinny. It doesn't have to be just allegations.
You know, it's ironic. I could make stuff up off the top of my head and make it the worst that I could possibly imagine. It'd probably turn out to have lots of evidence behind it.
Probably better to start off the other way. That's how I prefer to do it, Vinny.
But my way's more fun.
Can bite you on the bum sometimes. But no, very keen to hear what developments with Ian. We're certainly both on the same page regarding the real hard question, which is what was the role of John Key in the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, which left the derivatives market without regulation. And I asked that question back in about 2011. Funnily enough, I never got a reply. But this is the real hard question that mainstream media needs to be forced to ask. And we just need to ask it ourselves and keep asking it.
Yeah, g'day, Penny, that's for sure. And especially, as you know, he's trying to hide a lot of his past with the recent book that he put out. I actually took the time to read the financial section within it,
and
just to confirm something from the excerpts that they put in the New Zealand Herald, that the word derivatives doesn't actually appear in it.
Nowhere. Oh, you're joking.
No.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Well, but you can cry me a derivative. Cry me a derivative.
Because, as you know, Penny, when he turned up on the scene in 2005 or 2008, he was actually recorded on the record quite often skiting about his exploits in the heart of international high finance, and quite openly admits to his dealings as being to the head of Merrill Lynch's European Derivatives Division. But
he actually refers to his $5 million Parnell mansion as the house that Merrill built.
That's a fact.
But
yes.
Anyway,
I hear it's distinctly different from Groove Armada's The House That Funk Built.
And now that derivatives have become very much a dirty word, I believe the recent book is sort of an attempt to, people are beginning to look a little bit more into his past, and it's an attempt to disclose a little bit more to certain, but to hide certain elements that he doesn't want disclosed. So it's
it's interesting because just today I rediscovered the 2005 article Fran O'Sullivan did when he's, you know, basically saying sort of how wonderful Ireland was and how he, you know, encouraged people to go there because the tax rate was only 10%, blah, blah, and what, you know, a huge success for an investment it had been. So I did a bit more research because I did know that the Irish economy had gone clunk, and I found some really damning facts. So that's what we've done earlier on in the show. It's like, okay, it was all wonderful. Well, then it turned to mush. And the question is, how much is John Key personally responsible for the stuff-up of the Irish economy? Because it looks like he's very responsible, in my view.
Oh, he had a large part in it, of course. Like and when he turned up here in 2005, and when they got elected in 2008, he was pushing hard to have the same zero tax interest rate charged upon foreign funds earned offshore and moved here, and was claiming that we would make income out of all of the bankers moving their account. Their accountants and their lawyers here, and moving their back offices here.
Tax haven, basically.
Yeah, he was going to set up a foreign lending tax haven, just like they did in Ireland, basically take advantage of the corporate sweetheart tax rates. And of course, Ireland let them in to take advantage of the, you know, the zero zero tax rate upon foreign investments. The money moved there, laundered through the place. And of course, what happens with, like when most of these deals finish up, the accountants and the lawyers and the so forth, after they've done their tax accounting, actually claimed a rebate from the nation. So all of the income they were supposed to make from taxing these 5,000 new workers, financial system workers, it just turned into pie in the sky. They hollowed and gutted the place.
Well, they
had them hook, line, and sinker, and then they used the rebate. I find the interesting order there.
Yeah. And so now, of course, Ireland's economic sovereignty is just completely taken out of its hands. It's in the hands of the lenders, although the actions were completely predatory. But somebody within the Labour Party, the National Party, must have thought it was going to be pretty unpalatable to the constituents of New Zealand, because it seems to have gone on the back burner when he was pushing really hard there at a few, Fran O'Sullivan actually reported it, at a few business meetings, like, you know, stating that we need to get this thing done by such and such, and we don't need to go through the Magna Carta sort of thing. It's just, I'm telling Yuri Brownlee to make it happen, but it hasn't happened. So I do think that someone within the National Party thought it was going to be too unpalatable if they pushed it too hard.
This reminds me of a story that was told by a man named Michael Ropert from thewilderness.com. He's committed suicide now. He was exposing like a whole bunch of stuff about the world ending and and whatnot. And he was an investigator. And what he was doing was investigating like the Bush crime family connections and things of that nature. And he had all these documents and these books that people had published, you know, right out in the open, that fully proved that these were basically a bunch of criminals, the American presidency and the lines of which are just basically a criminal gang. And he mentioned this to somebody in Congress, and he said, if anybody reads this, there'll be a revolution. And the guy in Congress said, yeah, but the American people don't read. And the exact same thing, I believe, is true here. All the facts and all the evidence about John Key are totally out there. They're totally published. They're easy to find. But the people don't read.
Well, no, no. Well, what I'm finding is that, just tonight, the fact that I sent out a press release sort of far and wide. You see, I'm having great fun on Kiwi Blog because I'm finding it's a really, really effective way of getting your message across. It costs you nothing. And, of course, the more semi-hysterical the response to what you're posting, usually it's a very good sign that you're absolutely on track because, as you once said, Vinny, you don't cop the flak unless you're over the target. But, yeah, so I've posted this up on Kiwi Blog. They're asking this hard question of John Key, how much was he personally responsible for stuffing up the Irish economy? And there's not been that many dislikes. I think it's been, that's usually a sign that people are slightly stunned. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of people reading it. And I sent it to John Key and all the cabinet members and across the different political parties and to all different mainstream media. So, you know, yes, including Fran O'Sullivan, because I think she needs to be honest and she needs to do the follow-up because there is another story now that we've seen what's happened to Ireland. It was totally the opposite to how it was, at the time, it might have been all fine and dandy, but it just has turned into an absolute disaster.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's I believe our media, mainstream media, have a great part in it. They're meant to be the in-depth researchers on behalf of the people as the Fourth Estate to give us a balanced information to make our decisions from. And I used to think...
By the way, I just had my microphone muted to stifle my groans of cackling debauched laughter. Go ahead.
I used to... When I first discovered all of this, I used to think it was... that most every MP was corrupt and most every member of the media was corrupt. But over the years, I've come more to the conclusion that it's more a laziness that's taken advantage of by the senior elements of banking. They know how to tweak every one of our failings as humans, pretty much. People out there seeking the quickest way to payday, I believe, is probably the biggest reason why we're not getting detailed information. Most of it, I've trawled through line by line through every piece of regulation now relevant to our financial system. And you don't have to dig too deep to be able to see where what it causes is completely at odds with what the front end of our parliamentary apparatus is telling us we're trying to achieve. And so, you've got to ask yourself then, so why don't our media, our media, I believe, those that have made it to senior positions have been let there because they are financially illiterate more than them being seen to be financially literate, if you know what I'm saying.
Right.
Most of our corporate media now are majority stakeholder owned by senior elements of banking institutions.
Sure. Yep.
So the likes of Sean Plunkett and Duncan Garner and those guys that now think they have judged themselves to be some sort of New Zealand's highest form of intelligence.
They're basically the same dude. It's like Duncan Plunkett.
Yeah, yeah. And they have not an ounce of financial literacy. Like Duncan Garner makes comments like when he was on tour with John Key over in America that he was surprised at the likes of Timothy Geithner and that actually took the time to talk to him and stuff, you know, and he's joking around going, well, you know, they're talking all of this banking stuff and let's face it, that's a whole other man's language, you know. Well, if Duncan Garner wants to claim to be the senior most form of intelligence in the country, well, how about he takes the time to find out just what that language is they're talking?
How many people with English as a second language are mainstream news journalists in New Zealand, like prime time anchors and everything like that, who can't speak English properly? None? Oh yeah, that's right. You know why? Because it comes with the job. You got to do what you've got to do.
Yeah, no, they're very much. A lot of them have probably realise that if you want to stay in the industry, there's certain areas you go and there's certain areas you don't.
Yeah. Well, just on the, because, you know, you will have done more research in this area than me, Ian. In terms of New Zealand's exposure to derivatives, well, back in June 2012, it was about $112 billion. Do you have any update on that figure?
I haven't looked at the actual figure, but, you know, when you're starting to talk those sorts of sums, you don't really need to be too specific, Penny. But, you know, derivatives are basically hedging instruments that they use anything to basically...
gambling!
Basically to try and...
Oh, no. I came up with the perfect explanation for this. Okay. You know, when you go into a casino and you give them a couple of $100 and they give you all these chips back, but the chips are numbered like 500, 1,000, and 10, and 20s, and things of that nature. And there's a hell of a lot more chips in terms of numbers than the cash you gave over. The cash you gave over are the real assets. These numbers and all these chips that you get back that don't really exist, okay? That's the derivatives.
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's
however, the worst thing is these chips actually count as dollar for dollar what you've put in, not equal to what you've put in, but each of them is worth what they say on the chip, kind of thing.
Well, here's a definition of derivatives. That's from I think it's commondemocracy.info. Derivatives: the unregulated global casino for banks, okay? Short story. Pick something of value. Make bets on the future value of something. Add contract, and you have a derivative. Banks make massive profits on derivatives, and when the bubble bursts, chances are the taxpayer will end up with the bill. This visualizes the total coverage for derivatives notional, similar to insurance companies' total coverage for all cars. So I thought that was quite a handy little...
It's like to me, it's like a second layer of insurance on something that's already insolvent. You'd probably be aware of the historical admissions recently made in the Bank of England's first quarterly report of this year, Penny, where they basically come out and said that what's been told in the textbooks of economics around the world, especially for the last 60-odd years, especially in the Anglo-Saxon heritage nations, that from which all of our young, best and brightest people take their information to become advisors to our government and the likes, that the basis of which they've been telling us that banking works on the intermediation of already existing pools of liquidity has been completely wrong, and that it's basically just a system, a prudential reserve, where those in charge of administering the money supply weigh up what the purchasing power they authorise, basically to ensure that there's things on the other side of the deal to be purchased. Because if you authorise more purchasing power, then there are things to be purchased. Anything past that point enters the realm of counterfeiting. And so basically what when you accept somebody's currency, what you want to have confidence in is that you know, for your goods and services, you've just accepted some deferred purchasing power. And if you can't be confident that when you come to claim on your side of the deal that whoever gave it to you has things to purchase, you've just given them something for nothing. Well, the whole banking system has been operating on creating massive bundles of something for nothing to sell to people, and ultimately it's insolvent. And with the interest added, it just all falls in a hole. And then when people started to realise that these financial investments that the banks had sold them had no value, because there wasn't enough things to be purchased in the world for all of the purchasing power that had been created by credit, the banks went, oh, hang on, sweet, we'll come up with these. And John Key admits that he wasn't the one coming up with all of these ideas. He's on the record as saying he was the one in charge of the people coming up with these ideas. Yeah. So they all basically went, oh, look here, guys, no need to panic. We'll create these new products that will be like insurance upon the already layer of insolvent banking. So basically, they created these massive loan books again of, it was basically massive balls of counterfeiting that the rating agencies then said actually falsely rated, and then they sold them on to all the investment funds of the common pool people's investment funds of the world. And it was derivatives, when everybody began to realise that these derivatives had no backing, that actually caused and brought down and undermined the entire financial system, causing the collapse in 2008. And so John Key mentions about, you know, a good trader has to have impeccable timing, and, you know, in the excerpts from his book. He had impeccable timing. He was part of building this massive this pump and dump Ponzi pyramid scam, and when it was getting a bit hot, and then he cashed out, you see, and now he turns around and makes out like,
This reminds me of a really lame joke I heard when I was a small boy. You know what you call a chicken in a suit of armour?
Nope.
Impeccable.
Yeah, no, impeccable timing, mate, these senior elements of banking have.
And you can imagine him flying the coop.
Yep.
With the goose that laid the golden egg. How many analogies can I stretch out of this? Okay, I'm sorry. Keep going.
Another interesting development in recent times is back in 2007, prior to the last global financial crisis, the Bank of International Settlements, which is termed to be the central bank of central banks, it's the end of the line of the discount wholesale credit supply, which is at the heart of the private central banking network. They put out a report last time around in about 2007 stating that they believe the whole thing, openly stating that, you know, that the Bank of International Settlements warns of a Great Depression approaching sort of thing. To me, that was a dog whistle to the fact that, hey, boys, we've created all of this counterfeit credit that we've been receiving interest off for a long time now. It's about to be realised that this is most of it was based up on unrepayable bull dust, that there wasn't enough on the other side of the deal to ever repay. We're going to about to start putting up interest rates to, because they claim, you know, this interest rate inflation targeting is basically a what is caused by excess quantity of credit. Well, when who does it assist when you actually increase the cost of that credit as a means to stem the demand for it? You're basically rewarding the criminals that allowed it to happen. And so
isn't this how Wall Street was supposed to work? I mean, am I confused, isn't it?
But yes, well, yeah, no, this is in truth is how it works. It's all a pump and dump pyramid scheme. But prior to the last crisis, the Bank of International Settlements basically made a loud call that it's all about to collapse. To me, it was a dog whistle to all of their lower elements that had assisted them to. It was like saying, hey, we've got enough purchasing power from interest now. Now we're going to start calling in some loans, and they'll claim that it's in the interest of keeping stability in the system to reduce the demand of the peasants who have been taking out too much credit. We'll put up the cost of credit, despite it was them. Everyone trusts them to do the base credit accounting to keep it all in balance. That's what they claim we pay them the interest for. It's basically their fee for at the moment as being the admin of the money system. But just in recent times, they just released their latest annual report, and once again, they're screaming from the high heavens that instead of, where are we? BIS, an organisation representing the world's main central bank, said the overall somewhat gloomy message from the central bankers was that the world is drunk on easy money, has already forgotten the lessons of recent years. Instead of adding to productive capacity, large firms prefer to buy back shares and engage in mergers and acquisitions. The temptation to postpone adjustment can prove irresistible, especially when times are good and financial booms sprinkle the fairy dust of illusory riches, the report said.
Whoa. What lessons of previous years is he talking about? The bailout, all the bankers that got us into debt and give them all golden parachutes lesson and no criminal charges of any kind and not ask for a single share in the banks that the people are bailing out? Is that the lesson we didn't learn?
That's the lesson we didn't learn. And the report goes on to say, the consequences is the growth model that relies too much on debt, both private and public, and which over time sows the seeds of its own demise. So that's just in their recent annual report. So to me, again, the Bank of International Settlements, which basically, as I explained to you the other day, Vinny, the Anglo-Saxon Heritage Private Central Banking System, the senior elements or institutions of it are all owned by, you can trace them back, and it's been done by the likes of even Oxfam now, that who have traced it back, the cross ownership of everything, and basically, and they've
Have they got something current because then that sort of stuff's very helpful.
Yep, no, and they've announced that they can trace it back, the cross ownership, to 85 people owning 50% of the wealth of the world. 85 people.
Wow.
That's Oxfam.
That's obscene.
Indeed.
Those institutions are all owned by the family trusts of the ultra intergenerational wealth families of the world. They own the, at the moment, what they call, when you trace back the wholesale credit discount chain, because that's basically how business operates at the moment under the Anglo-Saxon heritage nations. Like the Eastern nations operate a whole different philosophy of money. It's called public central banking, where they basically take the collateral of their natural resource collateral and type it in the value of it into their own accounts and then spend it directly into circulation free of private bank interest, like the likes of Russia, China's a bit of a...
Oh, is that why we keep picking on those people, is it?
It is, yeah. Basically, those baddies over there in the eastern nations, that's the ultimate fault line in international high finance, is the difference between a lot of people. We think the left and the right in this country is like Labour, look after the worker, National, look after the business. People have forgotten that left and right is actually two ends of a spectrum of economic organisation, and the very dividing fault line is private profit central banking, where the private banks control the base accountancy of credit and the issuance of currency in your money system, or on the left, for any party to be truthfully claiming to be of the left, they have to practice what they call at-cost mode of public central banking. That's where they take the because that's basically all the private banks. What we absurdly do at the minute in this country is we've contracted out the base accountancy of our credit and the issuance of our currency to the Anglo-Saxon Heritage private central banking network. They take the collateral of our natural resources and our labour, our natural resources, and as collateral that gives value to the credit that they type into their account over there in London or the US Federal Reserve, and then they loan that money back to us as interest-bearing loans to circulate as the currency in our money system.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to go to break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. This is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you want to see it continue, please go to the homepage and start donating either through the KiwiBank account or the PayPal, or you could just message me and we can figure out a way to get some other thing if you hate, you know, bank accounts and PayPal and all of that kind of jazz. We'll be right back.
When you came in, the air went out, and every shadow filled up with doubt. I don't know who you think you are, but before the night is through, I wanna do bad things with you.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the final segment. It's the John Key special, and we have had three very special guests, two of which are still with us. Penny Bright from pennybrightformayor.org. I got it correct this time. And Ian Parker as well, who as yet doesn't have much of a website to speak of.
I do, actually, Vinny. Public credit, if anybody types into Google public credit or bust, they will come up with my blog, I'm sure. Public credit or bust.blogspot.co.nz, I think it is.
Public credit or bust.blogspot.co.nz, you say?
Yes.
It's a mouthful.
Yep. It does quite
well. Well, here's the problem. You can't exactly be a financial analyst and do something to the level that you do. And if I might say so, Ian, in terms of like the financial system, how it operates in New Zealand and things of that nature, in terms of all the people that I've interviewed in my career, you seem to have the best handle on it out of anybody that I know. And it astounds me that you – well, no, actually, it makes sense that very few people have heard of you.
Yeah, well, I didn't, mate. I just made sure. I've seen too many sort of step up and go off half-cocked. Russell Norman comes to mind when he started talking about printing or issuing bonds and buying our own bonds to rebuild Christchurch, which is a bloody good idea, but they jumped all over and shot him down as printing money is going to be inflationary and the likes. And then when it came to the crunch, he couldn't explain the various means of monetary easing, that there's a number of, well, three of them in the main and two of them favour the banks, and the one he was talking about doesn't, but he didn't know enough about it to explain it. He got all excited and sort of jumped in with both feet, and he wasn't up to it. So I just sort of, I had observed that over the years and made sure that when I poked my head up, I was going to be ready so they couldn't ridicule me off the face of the planet, basically.
So yeah, are you actually ready, or is this just like a little bit of a looking over the trenches, just going, will they shoot me this time?
I'll
take that as a yes.
you know, obviously, when you hit their radar big time, you'll come under more pressure from them. But at the minute, put it this way, it's a creeping, a growing awareness. I'm growing more of a following by the day. And unfortunately, a lot of it on my blog and stuff is from countries and throughout Europe and America, and it's America, Russia, and the likes show more of an interest in this than most New Zealanders at present. Sadly, most of the traffic on my blog is from offshore, especially in European nations. A lot of traffic from the Ukraine and the likes, where they're actually getting their throats seriously cut by this thing.
Well, we are allowed 1,000 times more pesticide in our water than they are in the Ukraine and the European Union.
It's we better move on with this more solution based sort of things, so that people don't go away and cut their wrists and think there are no solutions. The bottom line is, at the moment, like I said, our banking system is basically controlled by what they call the Anglo-Saxon Heritage Private Central Banking model, where private interests run and administer our basic base accountancy of credit and the issuance of our currency, and issue it as interest-bearing loans in its entirety, with the interest meant to be a fair and reasonable fee charged by them for their prowess in keeping what is authorised in balance of what there is to cover it. And they always cook the books, of course, in self-interest, by creating more credit and issuing it as interest-bearing loans than there is the means of repayment. And then they blame it all on us, rack up the interest rates to or start calling in loans, and then cause a recession for which they use the purchasing power they've gained from the interest to walk in and buy up under receivership all the distressed assets that we've slaved to build. That's pretty much the scheme. When you go to the Eastern nations, like Russia, the India, the Chinas, they have a different philosophy on money. They practice public central banking, where they take the natural resource collateral that gives value to the deal, type it into their own accounts, and then spend it directly into circulation to fund the essentials of life, basically build their essential infrastructure and everything without the impost of interest. So they presently do it. That's how they operate their systems. Russia is a fully functioning public central banking nation. Japan is, the likes of Argentina now. It's only the Anglo-Saxon heritage nations. But here's the kicker. What they don't really want us to know, and look back, they always talk about looking forward, is in the Anglo-Saxon heritage central banking network of nations, they don't want us to look back, because you'll find that most... every Anglo-Saxon heritage nation, including America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, when we first funded our state housing project with our own sovereign dollars, just given value by the fact we had the trees, the materials and the labour, and we just needed to make that happen, basically the natural resources and the labour, by issuing the means, the tokens of exchange, so that we could pay people to make it happen. And we've also done that. And in those nations... when we've practiced public central banking, there has never been, especially Canada, between 1935 and 1974, if you study their history, practicing fully functioning public central banking. They built all of their railroads, their dams, their infrastructure. They only had a debt of, at the end of that period, a small debt owed to themselves, which didn't really matter because it wasn't owed to foreigners at interest, of $18 billion. And then some scumbag fell for this trick that, we can get cheaper credit from this private central banking model and start borrowing it from them. And their debt today now stands, that's from 1974 when they fell for the trick of getting cheaper credit from these people. Their national debt is now $685 odd billion. And New Zealand, I was looking at some interesting figures in New Zealand the other day, around 1984, from a very good research outfit called CAFCA, that's the Campaign Against the Foreign Control of Aotearoa. They keep tracks on the foreign ownership of New Zealand's economy, and they were, you know, these they just said in 1984 odd, we only had a national debt of $18 odd billion. Now that we've fallen for this cheap credit from this private central banking network, and the debt that has been originated in this country that is owed to them sits at some $440 odd billion, on which we're paying $39 billion a year in interest. So basically what it comes down to now is that the person on the average wage in this country everybody sort of focuses on domestic income tax. People in this country on the average wage are losing purchasing power from their income straight away, flowing out in foreign dividends and interest in this country to about 50% of their purchasing power from income. That's how bad it is. So we need to do an audit. The private central bankers that our government has contracted out the base accountancy of our credit and issuance of our currency to this private central banking network. And the contract states that their job is to keep inflation low and price stability in place. Well, can be proven that they are not fulfilling their contract in both of those means, because they removed in 1999, they removed the residential land portion of housing from the consumer price index, which is meant to be what measures inflation as a sort of an alarm bell to that they're issuing too much credit.
The canary in the coal mine.
It is. So what it did by removing the land portion of housing from the consumer price index, it basically allowed the banks to pump credit for us to trade houses beyond what the normal course of business could ever support without ringing the bells that they claim. So, there's all of this hoo-ha about whether it's immigrants that are causing, they're causing a little bit of the inflated housing prices in this country, you know, to beyond, well, what the average wage can support. But this thing here is not even getting looked at, because it's like the banks in this country are untouchable, you know, you just can't look at them. And so to me, there needs to be an auditing of our national debt from somebody that obviously knows how it works to begin with, that has to do the auditing. There are plenty of high-level academics around the world now, especially since the global financial crisis, that have come out, the likes of Joseph Stiglitz, David C. Corton, these high-level guys. But if you could get them to come in and do an independent audit of our national debt, I'm sure they would find that these guys are in breach of their contract. And basically, we should just tell them to piss off and go back to... Our public debt, our government debt, can basically be annulled almost overnight, because they only practice a prudential reserve base, you know, accountancy of credit. It's just a book entry ledger system, basically, of accountancy. So we could say, you know, they authorise the value of the debt they lent us at the government level. We could overnight type that into our account and say, well, you said it had this value, and we can say goodbye to them. And wipe our frigging national debt overnight and start practicing fully functioning public credit banking, and then start, you know, basically using our natural resource collateral to spend directly our own sovereign dollars into circulation without foreign bank interest. And it's possible. It's been done before, and it's happening in most of the Eastern or the BRIC bloc of nations. They call them the BRICS: Brazil, Russia, India, China, Japan. Also practices fully functioning public central banking. A completely different philosophy on money, you know. And it's just an alternative that the owners of our corporate media and the owners of our private banking in this country don't even want us to know exists. Like, I'll give you the contract, our Auditor General's office is meant to audit these people, right, to make sure that they're delivering on their contract of price stability and low inflation. And I'll give you an idea from the Auditor General's office from 2007. This is the forward to the 2007 New Zealand Auditor General report, Effectiveness of the New Zealand Debt Management Office. And this gives you an explanation of what the New Zealand Debt Management Office is and just how competent our auditors are. It makes very clear how dependent upon the second-hand advice the New Zealand Public Service are and how susceptible to being misled that we are. The forward states, the New Zealand Debt Management Office, NZDMO, is a unit within the Treasury. It is responsible for the efficient management of the Crown's debt and associated financial assets within an appropriate risk management framework. Its broader responsibilities include providing capital market advice and financial transaction services to other agencies of the Crown. In carrying out a performance audit of the NZDMO, and remembering this is our Auditor General, my overall objective was to determine the NZDMO's level of performance under the authority of the Minister of Finance in managing the Crown's public debt and financial asset portfolios. Given the specialist technical functions of the NZDMO, I sought expert technical assistance with the audit. I appointed KPMG under Section 33(1) of the Public Audit Act 2001 to carry out the performance order on my behalf under Section 16(1) of the Act. The material in my audit report is of a very technical nature because of its specialist functions undertaken by the NZDMO. The non-technical reader can be assured that the audit did not identify any fundamental concerns with the performance of the NZDMO. So there you go. We've got our Auditor General stating that he cannot, doesn't have the ability to audit the New Zealand Debt Management Office, which our Reserve Bank has contracted out the accountancy of our base credit and issuance of currency to. And yet, in the very last paragraph, he assures us that we have nothing to worry about. And when you, I suggest to anybody to, you take the name KPMG and type it into Google and put the word fines after it, just as if you do it at the minute with most every major international banking institution in the world, you'll see a massive list of where these institutions have colluded with the senior elements of international high finance to construct pyramid frauds time and time again. So we basically have a bunch of...
This it reminds me of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where you have an entire book full of very, very scary creatures and hazards of the universe, and on the back you just have "Don't Panic" written on it.
Yeah, it's the Keystone Bloody Cops, mate. That's what it is.
Well, but, I mean, the thing is that, I mean, I've made contact with Professor Prem Seeker, who's based at Essex University, and he's a professor of accounting. And if you Google his name, I mean, there's just pages and pages and pages of references. He regularly writes for The Guardian, etc. And what his specialist area is like tax avoidance and the pinstripe mafia, which is the KPMGs, the Deloittes, the Ernst & Youngs, and the PricewaterhouseCoopers. That they're as dodgy as. I mean, you know, never mind that, you know, the your little small-time burglars and stuff. It's the pinstripe mafia. That's where the big bucks, all the, you know, the white-collar crime and the tax avoidance, the tax havens, all that stuff, that's where it happens. And, I mean, it's really scary stuff, and especially when you look at bloody dodgy outfits like Transparency International New Zealand and you look at who some of their sponsors are. It's the same sort of people. Talk about cover-up.
We've come up with so many great solutions already, I can't believe it.
Yeah, well, I think Penny's far more deeper. See, it's not really until recent times a lot of people put a lot of emphasis on commercial contract law starting to supersede common law, and it's only in recent times that I've sort of realised the importance of that now as well. Is, you know, with the TPP agreement that's being discussed in secret, Penny, you'd be well aware of that. And basically, the stuff that's been leaked, the conditions that are being imposed by what they call the investor state. Sure. You know, this is the financial institutions that are having a massive influence on the regulations and basically breaking down all barriers and giving them free entry to countries.
Well, it's outrageous because 600 corporations get to see the text and the public don't. So Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, what sort of partnership excludes the bloody public?
Yeah,
it's outrageous.
Yep.
And see, it's more like a piece of...
and you see, you'd be aware also, because you're pretty familiar with Jane Kelsey, aren't you?
Yes.
Tenny, you're friends with her, eh? But at least they're telling us of the PPP negotiations that have been held in secret, but there's another one that's came up, is it the TISS? They've just disclosed
it. TICS?
It's a new free trade agreement being done now... with the Europe, including the European Union nations as well, because what they're trying to do is basically form these currency blocks, and it's a bit like they've done with the local government here in New Zealand. You know, all our councils are in the poo because of this impossible funding puzzle that's basically a pyramid fraud. And so what they do is they go to a bunch of you and they go, well, the ones that are already underwater, if we mix you up with the ones that are just above water, we'll offer you this avenue to cheaper credit so you can all get cheap credit, but we form this cooperative of liabilities as well. So if one of you is go under, we can actually come in and set your rating base and everything with a view to repaying our debts. That's what the local government funding agency of New Zealand, basically where the council, many councils have joined now, is based in. It's the same thing as the European Union's a bigger model with about 17 countries in it. It's all these countries that were under this private banking pyramid fraud that couldn't stay. Some were already under and some were afloat. So they go and offer them these new cooperative to become these new cooperative pools of collateral, but they're also have to share the liabilities, and they can never repay. So ultimately, they all end up freaking seeking each other, and the bankers end up owning them all. And so this is it. No, this.
So the simple demand. Okay, there's an election coming up now. So what should the demand be for the political parties to pick up? This is what we reckon would fix it. Okay, off you go, Ian. What will fix it?
Could I say one thing before? Make fraud illegal. Go ahead, Ian.
Basically, I believe we should demand an independent audit from some of the more truly independent high-level people with international high finance that have a history of working for the good as opposed to the bad, and basically reviewing the contract of the New Zealand Debt Management Office to which our Reserve Bank has contracted out the our base accountancy of credit and issuance of currency. And if, you know, if those guys are found in, it is, mate, it's just it's just irrefutable when you look deeply into and go line by line and do the old Swiss cheese chart thing through our financial system regulation and what it causes, that they're not living up to their contract. And basically, and if they aren't, well, then we reclaim our Reserve Bank for ourselves. And because basically they told us this system would give us access to cheap credit, access to foreign markets. Basically, we don't need to worry about maintaining our versatility as a nation, because there is nobody out there that's going to take advantage of our vulnerabilities anymore. The world's benign, you know. And that's what we need. We need a review. And basically...
But what exactly, what is the document or documents that are going to be reviewed?
It's an omnibus of legislation. You know, the Public Finance Act, the Reserve Bank Act, the International Financial Agreement Act. Another one I just recently discovered, and this is, you guys will find this very interesting, because looking into that TPP, this institution that keeps coming up is this ICSID, this International Committee for the Settlement of Investment Disputes. Are you familiar with that, Penny?
Oh, yeah.
Sits under the umbrella of the World Bank, which of course is the soft lending side of the private central banking network, and the IMF on the other side is the receivership branch. Basically, when you inevitably can't repay your debts, the IMF come in as a receivers on behalf of the private central banking network and take over your affairs and supposedly trade you out of trouble. But like Joseph Stiglitz, the former vice president of the World Bank and Nobel Economics Prize winner, has said it's actually the institution that changed you further into trouble, basically, to get what they didn't get the first time around. So, but this international committee for this is, I thought this is what the TPP was already going to sign. It was going to sign us up to, and because it's an appointed arbitration board, it's not elected by anybody, and it's appointed by all the public institutions that are already subverted and perverted by criminal high finance, but. To my surprise, we are already signatories of it, and it got ratified in 1971, and we already have a number of our QCs already on the arbitration panels that go around holding court cases when, say, the likes of a corporation has done an odious deal with the previous government or the likes, and the next one comes in and says, oh, that's corrupt, we want to, you know, in the interest of the social motive. Well, they hold an arbitration court basically to see whether you must continue to hand over your assets, you know, confiscate the assets on behalf of the corporations, or basically what's happening there is or you have to pay compensation for impinging the future profits of the corporation. It used to cost only about $100,000 to take a claim to this institution. The cost of it now has risen to something like $7 million for the average claim just to go and defend you. And we have a number of our high-level, old-school QC lawyers and the likes that work out of this. There's an outfit in London called the Essex Courts Arbitration Lawyers. And so... One of our own QCs just appeared in a recent case with Ecuador, where some oil interests took the new Ecuadorian government to court because they've brought in all these new environmental standards.
Yep.
And one of our guys was already a part of an arbitration board that awarded the biggest, something like $1.7 billion and the biggest compensation awarded yet. So, see, my concern is we're already tied up with the arbitration courts of this of these outfits. And it makes me wonder, you know, I've always sort of wondered why there hasn't been much action on the financial abuses we're suffering. Well, you know, we're already essentially, I think, our economic sovereignty is pretty much a falsity. Like, you know, the International Financial Agreement Act that they recently passed back in 2012, I think it was, that passed into law, states that new regulations of the International Monetary Fund become automatic law or automatic regulation within our financial system structures without even now passing through Parliament. And that's been passed in. So, you know, a lot of our financial regulation, if we want to try and act against it for the social motive, is already out of our hands and in foreign bureaucrat institutions that are already, you know, majorly influenced by foreign big money, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, and on whose lawful authority? If the will of the people is the basis of the authority of government, how the hell did all this happen?
Yeah, well, you know, personally, I think we should use the TPPA as TP when you need to PP at a PPTA meeting.
Yeah, thank you, Vinny.
Gee, Lou, you're too sharp.
We'll
you're
be right sharp. Back, folks. Hang there.
You're too sharp for me, Vinny, I tell you.
You know, I should be on Seven Sharp, shouldn't I? We've only got one more minute left of the broadcast. Benny, have you got time for your solutions? Is there really a solution to anything? Look, okay, here's my creative solution. We sacrifice the bankers to an Icelandic volcano, okay? Debt crisis solved!
I seen that the other day, and I thought that was a bloody good idea, mate.
Stranger things have happened. You'll see the economy just go, boom, oh my God. Suddenly, all right. Did somebody sacrifice a banker to an angry volcano? I think they must have.
Yeah, 1 minute would be great.
Okay. Yes. Sorry, Penny, I'll shut up.
You have literally one minute.
Okay.
Go on, Penny.
Oh. Okay, folks. Like I said, Penny Bright Public Watchdog is going to take on John Key, the Wall Street Poodle, to become the MP of Helensville. Really simple, electorate vote, Penny Bright, MP for Helensville. John Key, doesn't matter, nobody votes for him. He's still going to be number one on the National Party list and get in anyway. So, why not have someone who's working for the 99%? So come on, folks, word of mouth, get that word out, and it's going to be fun.
Penny Bright, Ian Parker. The websites, ladies and gentlemen, are Penny Bright for Mayor, at wordpress.com, and also, what was it, publiccreditorbust.blogspot.co.nz, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that's if I remember correctly too, but if you type in public credit or bust on Google, you should come up with it.
Something of that nature. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for supporting the broadcast.